Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday afternoon. Hope everyone is having a great Sunday, and I hope the weather is okay wherever you are. But we want to say hello to the panelists. There are a couple of guys on right now. The rest of them are coming in slowly, but we will get it all going and get it going great. What I wanted to start off with is with the panel that I have. You know, the Supreme Court is going to debate whether picketing unhoused or homeless people violates the Eighth Amendment. And so I think that it probably does. But I, you know, I wanted to bring up with the other guests on the show. I was trying to make sure I was able to, you know, the Eighth Amendment has to deal with giving people tickets or asking people without jobs or anything like that. That was the Eighth Amendment. So what are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Hey, David. Thank you for calling on me. I don't know. It sounds a little ridiculous to me for several reasons. One is, you know, if a person is homeless, usually that means they don't have a lot of money or any money. So if they get fined, how the heck are they going to pay it? And then what happens if they don't pay it? Are they going to go to jail? And if they go to jail, you know, what's the point of that? Then how long are they going to be in jail for? You know, where if they do go to jail, we end up paying for all that. So I think it's just a stupid, you know, Band-Aid type of solution to a bigger problem that needs to be addressed in a different way. You know, and a lot of the homeless people have, maybe even most of them have some kind of mental health issue going on, which, you know, that in and of itself, I mean, precludes them really from having a normal, quote unquote, normal life and getting out and getting a job. So these are some of these people, you know, they're really, really in bad shape, and to give them a fine, you know, instead of trying to help them. Aren't we supposed to help each other? You know, what is that about? I don't get it.
Right. What about you, Don? What are your thoughts?
Thank you for calling on me, David. David, I think it's totally ludicrous. I'm appalled that could even be thought about. Here we are taking care of other countries, financing wars to the tune of billions of dollars, and we can't even take care of our own homeless. I'm done.
Right. Darius, we're talking about the Supreme Court is going to debate whether cities and stuff can give tickets and stuff to homeless people. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I heard part of what Ron was saying and Don. I got a different perspective. While I have empathy and compassion, you guys are also not thinking about the property owners. You're not thinking about the businesses that some of the homeless people camp out in front of, or the homes that they camp out in front of. Those people pay, and they need certain protections in place as well. Like, you want to be compassionate, you want to help them out, but if you are running a storefront and you got vagrants camped out in front of your store, you're going to be out of business pretty soon because no one's going to come there. And I've heard cases in California, San Francisco, Oakland, where there are homeless people that, like, are pooping on the sidewalks in front of these people's homes. So, you know, like I said, you got to look at both sides, and I understand the need for help, but I also have to take in consideration the property owners and the business owners.
Okay.
Hey, Darius.
Yes,
if I can ask Darius something, David, just out of curiosity, and I don't disagree with you, Darius. I mean, if I owned a business or you know, if they were in front of my home, I wouldn't want that either, of course. But do you think a fine is the solution? I mean, how do they even have money to pay it?
Yeah, that's it's just, I guess, for show, because they're homeless. They're not going to show up to court. They're going to pay the fine. So it's much ado about nothing, actually. I think they should be able
to. Exactly.
So I'm thinking with that fine, what they're probably saying is, hey, we're going to have permission to move you from the location that you're in, and if you don't comply, then I guess that's just an added threat, but it's a veiled threat.
Hey, Darius. When I first moved to Miami, I think it was 2008, I would drive downtown to AAA Arena, and I would see homeless people sleeping in front of AAA Arena, all along Biscayne Boulevard, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and D-Wade signed for the Miami Heat. And within 7 months, I didn't see any more homeless people sleeping downtown Miami. The economic structure is always going to take care of their property. But a human life is totally different. We've got to build systems inside of our government that house homeless people and people that need shelter. Now, see, here in Miami, they can hang out here because the weather is so conducive, because it's nice and warm. But it's not like that in other parts of the country where it's cold. I just want to say I actually saw that. And, David, you was here at the same time. And you saw how downtown Miami was cleaned up. And I saw homeless people like I had never seen before. I mean, we got to take care of our own people. I just beg you, let's take care of our own people. Man, we just gave away billions of dollars. Where'd that money come from? Where'd that money come from?
Don, I remember that too, Don. And you just made me think of something. Where were those homeless people taken to? They didn't just disappear. And I remember,
exactly.
And you probably do too, the city of Miami Beach, I think it was, at one point started shuttling their homeless people and dumping them in the city of Miami. Do you remember that? And,
yes.
And why is it that when you go to a upscale area like Coral Gables or Sunny Isles Beach or whatever, you don't see homeless people? So what are those cities doing with the homeless people? That's,
exactly.
That's the question I'd like to answer.
What is Aventura doing with the homeless people?
Right.
You know, there was a point where all the other cities were complaining against Miami for putting all their homeless in buses and dropping them off in other cities and other states even. That was kind of crazy. But I think it's very difficult for us to, following what Don said, we spend all this money giving it to other countries, but we can't take care of our own people. Something's wrong with that picture. What are your thoughts on that, Darius?
Well, unfortunately, you know, money isn't the solution. It's cyclical. So the more money that you pour into trying to end homelessness, more homelessness you create. You look at a perfect example of what's going on in California. What they did was they tried to give the homeless checks every month to help them get back on their feet. But what started happening is more and more people became homeless because they realized that now I can go get my drugs and my alcohol and I don't have any responsibilities and I'm going to get a check every month. So while I understand what, you know, what you guys are saying, I don't agree with the giving all this money away to foreign countries to the extent that we are right now either. But I don't think that the answer is to give that money because all you're going to do is create more homelessness. And a lot of these people are where they are. It's not because they don't have any money. And I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of people out there who are downtrodden and, you know, who've had bad experiences and, you know, taken a fall in life. But there are a lot of them who are choosing or have some sort of sickness or addiction that place them in a position. And some of them don't want to be taken off of the streets because they like their lifestyle that they're living right now.
All right. Pardon me? You're saying that they should get ticketed and they should have some kind of criminal law brought against them, Darius, if they are homeless? The homeless have increased 12% since December. So it's a lot going on right now. In terms of people not being able to take care of themselves.
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying it should be against the law and that they should be penalized. I said that that's not going to do anything to solve the problem. But they should have some kind of enforcement on moving people in back from private property or from the public spaces. You know, if you're have kids and you want to take your kids to the park, you know, you should be able to do that and not have homeless people out there and not have your kid, you know, step on a needle on a playground, you know, or with somebody urinating, you know, in the building behind the playground. You're just trying to take your kids for a walk in the park. So we can be compassionate and we can be practical at the same time.
All right. Michael, I don't know if you have the whole sentences, but what are your thoughts on the Supreme Court debating whether states can give and cities can give tickets to homeless people?
Hey, David, thanks for calling. I hope you guys can hear me. I'm driving right now. But, yeah, I heard that, David, and I think that's terrible. I don't think you should criminalize or punish homelessness. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles, California, which is the epicenter of homelessness. When I say there's tents all up and down every city, every street in this city, they're up and down every street, even the ones in Beverly Hills, the ones in Compton. They're homeless people all around this city. So I totally understand it, and I agree with Darius. I don't like that when I want to go to the park or go somewhere, I got to step over a bunch of needles and a bunch of feces and homelessness. I agree with that. I hate that. But I don't want to punish those people. Because I do understand that the cost of living is high. It is. The cost of living is very high, especially here in Los Angeles. And the money people making is very low. In order to survive here, I'm just going to go with my city because I know my city very well. In order to survive in Los Angeles, meaning, and I don't mean living good, I mean just survive it. Just pay your rent, car note. You got to be bringing in about $65,000 to $70,000 a year. And that's just to have an apartment, I mean, with a car and just insurance. Okay, the average person is not making that. The average person, the minimum wage is $30,000 a year in itself. So there's an income inequality gap that's kind of forcing the homeless issue, and I think we're not looking at that. And I'm going to say this and make this the last part. I was just reading where an executive at Disney here in my city of Los Angeles, his name was Les Moonves. He made $70 million last year. One guy made $70 million in 1 year, okay? That's more than enough. If he would have taken half of that, took $35 million, that would have gotten the majority of these people I'm looking at in these tents out of these tents. So I think that has a lot to do with it, David. Income inequality. I think the rich need to start paying their fair share and helping out the poor. The answer is not to lock up the poor people.
All right. Just so you understand, the Eighth Amendment of the United States is excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted upon people who are having issues or unable to pay their bills. That is actually the Eighth Amendment of the United States of America, so that's why the Supreme Court is going to pick it up. But obviously a lot of cities have been not following the law. All right, let's move on. Ron, was there something you would like to bring to the table?
Sure. Thank you, David. I wanted to ask the panelists how you all feel about what's going on with TikTok again. And if I don't know if you heard, but Congress is getting closer to actually forcing TikTok to be sold or to ban it in the U.S. And they put that provision or whatever you want to call it inside this $95 billion foreign aid package that passed the House yesterday, I guess it was. And, you know, I personally, I'm a TikTok user. I don't let propaganda or whatever you want to call it influence me. I just look at it for the cute, funny animal videos or, you know, stupid videos that people post. I'm not dumb enough. I'm not saying, you know, that other people are dumb, but, you know, I know where I can trust the news that I get to make informed decisions, especially when it comes to the future of this country. So I personally feel, well, this is exactly how I feel. Who the hell is the U.S. to try to force another country to sell, you know, to sell this platform, TikTok, number one? You know, what about my rights? You know, what about my freedom and my rights to, if I want to listen to what TikTok, I mean, what's next? I mean, are they going to say, okay, ABC, CBS, NBC are banned. We're not going to allow those anymore. I just have a real issue with that. And yes, I understand that China bans YouTube and some other major American platforms. But, you know, is this really a tit-for-tat kind of thing? Or, you know, do we honestly think that they can influence our politics and how people vote? I guess in some ways maybe it can, but I, for one, don't really buy it. And I'm a little bit upset that the government is telling me or could be telling me that I won't be able to listen to TikTok anymore. You know, like I said, what's next? Are they going to take Twitter down, Instagram, whatever, Facebook? So those are my thoughts, David. I'm curious what Ron especially has to say.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, Ron, because I'd like to chime in on what you just said. And you're speaking very intelligently, Ron, and you're an intelligent person. But I'm going to talk to you about the thug in me. There's a bit of thug in me, and I'm in the media. The FCC does not regulate the social media platforms like they do radio and television stations. And these radio and television stations have a tremendous influence on the mental attitude, politics, every fiber of a person's well-being, every person's lifestyle. The FCC has gone to sleep, but yet and still these social media platforms have invaded our culture and our work habits and our lifestyle like never before. And TikTok is a younger demo, which is very impressionable with that younger demo. And they're gathering information can be used in the future. And I don't know how they're going to use it. And the thing is, I don't know who owns TikTok. It could be some mad Chinaman with a lot of money that's saying, wait, I'm going to take over and sell all this information to the Chinese government because they've already bought up a lot of land in the United States. I think they need to change ownership. I think they need to come in compliance with all the other social media platforms that's owned by people in the United States. They wouldn't have any problem finding a buyer. I tell you, TikTok just came out of nowhere, man, the last 5 years. Scared of TikTok, Ron.
Don, I understand everything you're saying, and we'll give the other panelists a chance too, but I just wanted to push back a little bit because I don't want the Chinese, you know, knowing everything about Americans and how we behave. I don't want that, you know. But are we doing it just because they're communists and just because their ideas are different than ours? And if Russia had something similar, would we be doing the same? But what if, I don't know, France, Germany, whatever, came up with something similar? I'm sure they have it. Would we ban that too if they tried interfering in our elections, or maybe not because they're not communists? Does it have more to do with that? Maybe I don't know.
All right. What do you?
Yeah, I'll weigh in
go
on
ahead.
David.
Sure.
Ron, to answer your question, I think it's because China is such an adversary of ours that they have such a problem with it. And you're right, though. Where does this stop? Are you going to ban ABC, CBS? Because they're owned by basically Israel, by the Israeli government kind of runs those companies, right? So what's the difference there? So I do agree with the government doesn't have a right to tell someone that they have to sell their product. But that product is somewhat of a threat to our society, a threat to our defenses. And if that product is a threat to our defenses, then, yeah, maybe we should. And the owner of that product is a foreign adversary. Then that does kind of make you want to kind of force them to sell it, Ron.
But they're a foreign adversary, but we do more business with China than with almost any other country.
Yeah, the politicians are idiots. I agree.
All right. Darius,
do you have any comments?
I really don't have enough information on how it's a threat to us. But apparently it's not just their ideas and their propaganda. Apparently they're using it to gather intelligence as well. And I just have to believe that the government wouldn't be as focused on this one social media platform if they didn't believe or see some sort of evidence that it's a viable threat to our national security. So that concerns me because, you know, every time they try to push it away, they keep talking about it. So it's more than just mere propaganda, even if that's all they're telling us. It's got to be something very serious in order for them to talk about forcing them to sell. And I understand what you're saying, Ron, and that's a viewpoint that I very rarely hear you take when you talk about individual freedoms. But you're right. As Americans, we should have the individual freedom to choose whatever platform we like. But as the government, they have a responsibility to protect our national security. And if they believe that this platform is a national security threat, they do have the actual not only right, but they have the obligation to shut them down or force them to sell it. And they can force them to sell it because they're a foreign entity, not an adversary at that. So they can absolutely make them sell the corporation to an America-friendly company.
And I get all that, Darius. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, Ron, I just want to tell you that in order to own a radio or television station in America, you must go through background checks and also you must be a U.S. citizen.
Yeah. But what I was going to say, and I understand it all, and actually I'm mostly in agreement with banning it, but part of me is a little pissed off, I'll be honest, that the government is telling me what I can and cannot listen to. But you know, the whole thing with China banning YouTube, And we criticize people in China because we say, oh, they have no freedom because the government tells them what they can and cannot listen to, but yet we're going to do the same thing. That's all. I mean, but generally, yeah, if it's going to pose a threat to our national security, then, you know, F them, basically.
All right. Okay, Don, do you have something you'd like to bring to the table?
Well, the big elephant in the room just happened yesterday. What was it, $90 billion, was it?
Okay, what is it?
Was it nine? Correct me if I'm wrong. Did I hear $90 billion?
$95 billion, yeah.
Oh, add the five. $95 billion. Where did this money come from? I mean, do we just print this money? Is this money in a safe? Is this money in Fort Knox? Is this money in gold? Where did we find that money to give to other countries to fight a war?
Well, we just got through with paying our taxes. That's where
the money came from.
Help me out, gentlemen. I'm kind of slow. Help me out. Where did that money come from? Where did we get that money? What, was it in a safe somewhere that we were hiding it? Was it at the U.S. Mint? Do we have some more?
Isn't that the funding of the IRS?
I don't think...
No, Don is exactly correct. They're printing it. We're broke. $13 trillion in debt. We don't have any money. We're at a deficit. Even after all the money we collected in taxes, we're running a deficit of $1 trillion. So yeah, Don, you're absolutely right. We printed it. We made it up. We printed it out of thin air. And we're laying the debt on our children and our children's children. We don't have this money, and we're going deeper and deeper in debt. You know, I'm frustrated like you are, Don, and I'm more frustrated because not only are we giving this money away from these foreign countries, we're giving the money away, Republicans and Democrats both, to fight foreign wars and protect their borders, and our freaking border is wide open. And there are only some wide open. There are some Congress people on the Hill were saying, look, we'll give you the money or we're going to help them, but let's not do anything until we secure our border first. Address our issues here first, and then you can help someone. And that's all they were saying. And they ran those people out of town. They voted in the dark of night and didn't even listen to those people. They called them whack jobs. Oh, you want to let Russia, you're a Russian sympathizer because you don't want to give money to Ukraine. No, I'm not a Russian sympathizer. I'm an American sympathizer. I want us to take care of us first.
Let me tell you, Darius, they're not printing money. We don't go over and hand them dollar bills and $100 bills. What that is a guarantee that we will, the United States, pay certain notes and things that they send over to the United States. That's what they're doing. Like they want to buy planes and they want to buy weapons and things like that.
So it's a promissory note. You know, so David, it's a credit card thing is what you're saying, right?
Basically, it's a debit card. Yeah. So we're not built, you know, nobody's going to take dollar bills and stuff. They throw that in the trash because they know it was worthless. What it is us saying that we have enough silver and gold to claim it, and we will, you send us your bills and things that you have, and we account for those debits with our credit.
Yeah, David, but it's still called printing money, though. I didn't mean like we literally are giving them cash, but it is printing it because we don't have it, so you have to create the money in some form. So that's what I mean. That's why when they say printing money, like we're running a deficit. So that money has to be print it. And, yeah, of course, it's not like we're actually printing $100 bills, but that money does have to be put in the circulation because we're saying that we're taking that money from the Treasury or we're borrowing that money. And what they're using is they're using tax notes, T-bills, basically, and bonds, which is even worse because once national or foreign governments start buying those T-notes and bonds, like China is, we're going to be beholden to them for all this money. We're on the hook for it. Whether we print it, even if we, or whatever the case is, because we don't have it, we have to borrow it. We have to sell bonds and our T-bills.
And you know what, Darius? I think that when they buy these missiles and buy these this war equipment, they buy it from the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's one of the what they call benefits of it. They're like, oh yeah, all this money is not just it's a zero sum game because they're buying the weapons from American manufacturers and creating jobs and who's making the missiles and you got big companies like Raytheon and you got Boeing and Lockheed Martin, which are manufacturing these weapons and these bombs. So some of it is coming back in that form. But it's still money that we don't have. We're still spending money we don't have.
All right. Let's move on. Darius, you have something you'd like to bring to the table?
Sure. I noticed this issue has raised its ugly head again, and I know we discussed this on the show a while back. Joe Biden just came out the other day, and not just Joe Biden, but a lot of people have come out saying it, and this is on both sides. The really crazy thing about Caitlin Clark and how Caitlin Clark's salary is less than $75,000 a year and how much of a travesty that is that she is only making $75,000 a year when you got NBA players that make more than that in one game. And they're making this comparison saying that there is a gender gap. You guys know what I think, so I won't even elaborate on what I think about this. But it's been a big thing all week since Caitlin Clark was drafted number one pick, and she's brought a lot of attention to the WNBA. So now everybody's talking about that. And I want to hear what you guys have to say, and if you would allow me to, David, when they're done, I'd like to kind of tie it up.
All right. I'll take the first bite. Darius, that situation has been existing ever since the Basketball Women's League has been in existence. They play fewer games. Most of the players that have been notoriety, that have strong notoriety, have been women of color. And now we have a white woman can shoot the lights out. A phenomenal basketball player. I hope she raised the standard and raised the income. But the thing is, it took a Becky to do it.
All right. Any comments on that, Michael?
Yeah, I'll comment on that one. Yeah, I agree with what Wiggins was saying, and just directly to your point, Darius, it's ridiculous to me because the bottom line is the NBA generates more revenue than the WNBA. End of conversation, like literally. Okay, the WNBA doesn't generate a lot of money, so therefore you can't pay the players but a certain amount of money. It's simple economics. Now, I want to address LeBron James and Steph Curry and all the NBA guys who are on their side saying, hey, that's not fair. Well, if it's not fair, LeBron James, subsidize her with your pay. You make $90 million a year. Cut it down to $45 million and give her the other $45 million, since it's such a big deal, LeBron James, Steph Curry. They could really take pay cutting their money and give their money to them if they really, really care, but they don't. So, yeah, to me, it's just a non-question. And like Don said, it's just because all of a sudden it's the white girl. The white girl's not getting enough money. So that's why they're making a big fuss about it.
All right. What are your thoughts, Darius?
Well, we didn't hear from Ron.
No, Ron had to take a break.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so Michael, you're absolutely right. It is a simple economics. You know, I heard, like you said, LeBron and Steph Curry, you know, they're basically just, you know, they're pee-whipped. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to gain some kind of support from, you know, the liberal establishment and from their girlfriends, wives, I'm sorry, from their wives and their wives' girlfriends. And so that's why they say that nonsense. They know it's totally stupid because it is economics. The biggest thing is, Michael, and I don't know if you know this, I just learned this the other week, that the WNBA has not made a profit since its inception. So over 20 years, they haven't even made a profit. So when you compare the money that the WNBA brings in versus the percentage that they pay their players, they are actually making more money than the NBA because they get more of a share. than the NBA players do. They get a larger share, but it is a small percentage. Not small percentage. There's a smaller number because of, like you said, Michael, there are no ticket sales. There's nobody watching it on television. So they have television contracts, but very few viewers. All these people that are talking, ask them how many WNBA jerseys do they own? How many WNBA games have they gone to? You know, how many WNBA games have they sat down and watched on television? It's all a joke, man. It's all charity, really, because they're not making any money. So whatever it is that they get paid, they're overpaid.
And then again, how many tennis shoe contracts like Nike and the rest of them are pitching in with tennis shoe rights?
Exactly. And they're talking about $75,000, Don, for Caitlin Clark. But if you notice when she got drafted, you guys saw who was up there on stage with her? I don't know if you saw it, but it was Jake from State Farm. So she's already getting paid. That NBA salary, WNBA $75,000 that she's getting, that's a drop in the bucket. That's something she's going to use just like maybe take a vacation with. She's getting millions of dollars from sponsors, millions of dollars in ads.
She's going to have endorsements like you wouldn't believe, brother. Just wait. Oh,
absolutely.
My God. If I owned a major company, I'd sign a deal with her right now.
Hey, and Don, normally I don't agree with you on the racism thing, but this is a situation where if it was a black girl, like you said, that was shooting the lights out like that, you know, they wouldn't be throwing money at her like that. She wouldn't be getting all of this attention, but she's getting it because it's a little white girl from Iowa, and I'm not taking anything away from her skills. But this is a situation where, you know, racism, I wouldn't say racism, but I would just say this is a situation where her race definitely played a factor in her getting paid.
Hey, Darius, we're just looking at reality. I'm not saying I'm racist. I'm not saying this is a racist situation. She is the person without melon that's been chosen to raise the salary for the WNBA.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
All right. Michael, something you wanted to bring to the table?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for calling on me, David. Well, in my opinion, tomorrow is going to be the first day of the trial of the century. So I don't know if you guys talked about the trial of the century tomorrow, but tomorrow is the first time in American history that a former president is going on trial. So like I said before, I got my popcorn ready. This is going to be good. So, yeah, I want to hear what the panel has to say about it. Because, like I said, Stormy Daniels, the porn star prostitute that he slept with, is taking the stand to testify. So, yeah, are you excited, Darius? Are you ready for this?
I'm not going to watch it. It's a waste of time. It's a joke. It's a waste of everybody's time, including Stormy Daniels, for that matter. I don't care. I don't know if anybody – I don't care about what he did. I don't care about what anyone really does in the privacy of their own homes or their business, their life. it just doesn't matter to me. It doesn't. I don't have an interest in that kind of stuff. But what I will say is, you guys got to keep in mind that if they have to hype it up to say this case is about him having sex with a prostitute and paying her to keep her mouth shut, then you know that the case really doesn't have any merit, because you know that's not against the law. This case is meritless. It's baseless. They're trying to get him for putting an expenditure on the wrong line item. That's really what they're doing, which is a misdemeanor, and he's trying to elevate it to a felony. That's all this case is about. It's not going anywhere, even if he wins in New York, which I don't know if that'll happen. I'm sorry, even if Donald Trump gets convicted in New York, it's going to get overturned in appellate court. We know this already. It's not going anywhere.
I have a question I'd like to ask the panel, maybe you could chime in on this, my brother Mike. You too, Darius. When you're the president of the United States and you have Secret Service protection for the rest of your life, if Donald Trump is sentenced to jail or prison on any of these cases that he's facing, how do they handle that? Does Secret Service go to jail or prison with him, or does he get home arrest with Secret Service? It's never been done before. It's never been dealt with before, but I thought about that. How do we deal with that?
Simple. I thought this one through. I know the answer to that.
What's the answer?
You want my answer?
I'm sorry.
The answer to that, yes, if he is convicted and he has to go, they'll just put him in a certain wing of that prison, meaning they'll build it out to where he's in isolation within the prison. And, yes, I'm pretty sure he'll probably have a Secret Service man with him throughout his entire sentence. That Secret Service will come and go back and forth. They'll rotate, blah, blah, blah. But long story short, they'll set the prison up. They'll build a certain wing of the facility to accommodate him and all his needs.
Michael, he'll have his own Mar-a-Lago, huh?
Yeah, basically, he'll have his own Mar-a-Lago at San Quentin, yeah.
I hope for your sake and for my high opinion of you that I hold now, I hope that you're joking. If you think they're going to build a wing onto a prison, this man will never go to jail, never, ever. No U.S. president will ever go to jail. The worst case scenario is he'll get house arrest, he'll get confined to Mar-a-Lago, or if it's in New York, Trump Tower, whatever the situation is. But it's not going to happen, guys. There's no crime that Donald Trump has committed. You guys know it. You're just not being honest with yourself. You know that this is a setup. This is a trap. I mean, this is election interference. This is Joe Biden's way of trying to get Trump out of the way so they could win, because they cannot beat him on policy.
All right. Interesting. So we have one of our listeners has a question I think that's going to be interesting for our panel. It says, you know, I thought our marriage was great except for one thing. We've been married for 31 years of being married, and my wife and I have never, ever addressed sex. And sex seems to have been a problem for us for over 30 years. Is it right for the man to come up with that comment to his wife, or do you think it should be avoided? What are your thoughts on that one, Don?
Well, I'm kind of glad you called on me, David, because my wife and I have been married for 43 years, and I'm dealing with ED right now. And it's something I never dealt with before, David. But since this is the man's voice, I'm going to share it. And they say that there's doctor help. So I had a conversation with my wife about that, and we're discussing it now. So my suggestion to that person is sit down, the both of you, with medical help and get some help for that.
Okay, but I think this question is, should he discuss sex with his wife? They haven't talked about it for 31 years. They just don't talk about it.
It's a part of life. I mean, did they have sex when they were young and in year number one?
Right. All right. Darius, what are your thoughts?
I'm just amazed that they went 31 years. I mean, but if he...
I am too, Darius.
But I will say this, and hopefully he's listening. I don't have the same amount of, well, I guess I do have that much experience in marriage. Not all with the same woman, though. But I will say this. Anything, your wife is your best friend. That's your life partner. So it's not just about sex. If there's anything at all that's bothering you or that you have an issue with, you absolutely 100% should discuss it with your wife, with your spouse, and you should discuss it often and early. Anything that you feel is a problem with you regarding your marriage or a problem within your marriage should be addressed immediately, because I think holding stuff like that is what causes marriages to explode, because someone is harboring some sort of resentment or frustration. So absolutely you should talk about it. Not just that, but anything.
All right, what about you, Mike? I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
No, let Michael respond. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I can't believe they went 31 years either. That's what's shocking. But I kind of understand it, because after a while with your spouse, the conversation about sex does become a little uncomfortable. I mean, it just really does. So I do kind of understand that, but I do think it's important. You guys should definitely have that conversation. And I think the conversation should be, can we have sex outside of the marriage? That should be a topic of conversation, because I just don't think it's possible for any man. And I don't know if you guys are going to agree with me, because we're all married here, but it's hard for a man to not want to have the desire to sleep with another woman. That's just almost impossible, to spend 31 years only sleeping with the same woman and not think about another woman. So I think that should be an open conversation, because if those two are not having any conversations about sex, I guarantee you his mind is wondering about other women over the last 31 years. So if they're not talking about that, I'm pretty sure he's talking about it to himself, and he's not talking about sex with her. He's talking about sex with Halle Berry and Beyonce.
I agree with you, Michael. Because when Adam was laying in that garden and he saw Eve, he said, "Whoa, man. I mean, womb, man.
Can I talk now? Or should I wait?
One of our listeners said something on the show, sir. Go ahead. What was it you'd like to say?
Okay. I was going to say that the caller, just for the one who ended with that particular, well, not the very last one, but the one who ended with that dissertation about how to talk about sex outside of marriage, there were a couple of you who were talking about how it's appropriate for the man to sit down with the woman and talk about sex. Absolutely. But the poor guy in the chat room or whomever gave you that particular narrative to express on your show didn't seem like he was talking about the circumstances regarding why he wasn't talking about sex for 31 years. I would presume, and it's not because he wants to talk about sex outside of the marriage. The guy wants to, combat his conditioning of bringing up a subject which is uncomfortable, not only to him, but to her. She may be resisting the conversation because there's a lack of communication there. So what I think the guy is saying is, I'd like to bring it up. I don't know how, but if I do, how do I do it in such a way so as not to be disruptive and not to get into drama? And I think you guys, since you guys have the shows here, I presume you guys are all the leaders of your families. And I would say to the guy who gave you that particular problem to solve, he has to, I don't want to use the word step up because that has a negative connotation, but what he should do is let the woman know, I'm the man, we're going to have a conversation. I'm sorry if this is uncomfortable for you, but if we've been having sex, which is unsatisfactory for both of us, this has to be resolved, and I want to do it now. That way he takes the leadership role, and even if it offends her, too bad. Because without that, look at the result. 31 years of, if they're lucky, being in a separate bedroom. And now I'll land my plane. I'll let you guys respond to me.
All right. Don, you want to answer that or comment to that?
I kind of agree with the caller. It has to be addressed. Like I said before, address it with her. Like it said by my brother earlier, that's a life partner. I mean, you've been married to her. Talk to her. Hey, baby, it's been 31 years we've been together. We haven't had sex. I like women. Why is it that we can't have sex? Tell me right now. Because I got a desire to have sex. Can we do it right now?
Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, my question to I'm gonna ask this one directly to Brother Wiggins because you've been married the longest. Is there, throughout a marriage, does there ever become a time where you just don't want to have sex with your wife anymore? Because you know, I'm kind of new to this whole marriage dating thing, and I'm not there yet. But I could see maybe after 20 years, I'm gonna be like, okay, I don't want to have sex with you anymore. You're still my wife, and I love you, but I want to have sex with someone else. Does that happen, Brother Wiggins?
Yes, I'm going to be truthful, Mike. That happens. I mean, your mind begins to wonder, but I'm going to say this. When your mind begins to wonder, play the tape all the way through, brother. Because there's consequences.
I'd like to respond to that.
All right, sir, go ahead.
If you've had sex for 20 years within a marriage, you can consider yourself lucky and amongst the one half of 1% of American marriages that have had sex for that long. I would think that most marriages within about 2 to 4 years, both men and women are probably pretty tied with each other. If not because the sex in and of itself is bad, but because the relationship has soured. The rose has fallen off the bloom, or is it the other way around? I always get that confused. So after the honeymoon period, after the 2 years of being a wife and a husband for the first time, which is a lot different than being a fiance and a boyfriend and a girlfriend, you have now settled into knowing each other's idiosyncrasies, which you haven't learned about before because you two are now together. You have now learned that the conflict resolution skills that you may have acquired while you were together as boyfriend, girlfriend, do not apply in your marriage. So, again, if you've had good sex for 20 years and then find yourself kind of asking where is the excitement gone, you've been pretty lucky. And, again, I'll land my plane.
All right. Any comments on that?
Yeah, I want to hear Darius' thought on that because he's a married man as well.
Okay, Darius.
I don't think we addressed the gentleman's first question, though. I think about how to bring that up to his wife that he wants to maybe have someone else come in the situation. I heard what Don said, but I think a more clever way of doing that, if he's listening, would probably just be bringing up as a scenario. maybe come up with a fake friend and say, hey, do you know that Bob and Susan are doing this? What do you think about that? How do you feel about that? You know, that way, if she's totally disgusted by it and turned off, you hadn't put yourself in hot water. You know, you're still in the clear. You're only talking about a scenario. But, you know, the thing is, it's always best, man, to see if you can work it out with your life partner. Whatever those issues are, whatever it is that's made you bored or whatever it is that's not allowing you to enjoy one another anymore, work it out. Figure out what it is. Change it up. Spice it up. You know, it's always better to do that, because when you open the door to bringing another person in or to having an open marriage and open relationships, what happens now is you got to remember that sex is more than physical. It's a spiritual thing as well. So you're inviting another spirit into your relationship. And I would say do everything you can first to try to reinvigorate the sexual relationship with your partner before you take any other or try any other avenues.
All right.
Big year for them in terms of that sex.
What?
I'm sorry. Say that again. What'd you say, Michael?
That wasn't me. That wasn't me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm nowhere near bored though.
hey, but Michael, like I said, there's another part to the story. You got to play the tape all the way through. You just can't stop in the middle of the tape. Because if you open that door, like Darius said, it's another spirit that is inside of you when you have sexual relationships with another person. Does she want to play that game, or does she want to open that door as well? So I think communication is the key. And all that getting, get an understanding.
Right. Here's the problem I deal with, and this is my question to the panel and to the men in our last little 3 minutes here, is that after 8 years with the same woman, I've been with my woman for 8 years now, and she is my best friend, but that makes me kind of not necessarily want to do certain, you know, sexual things with her, because I look at her as my best friend, not as my freak partner. I want to go get another girl to be my freak partner. So I know that sounds weird and crazy, but that's kind of how I'm me personally, and I hear other guys say it too. Like, yeah, after so long of her just being my best friend, I don't want to have sex with my best friend. I just don't want to. It's just uncomfortable.
Well, Mike, maybe she wants to have a freak partner too.
Wow.
Hey, Don, he didn't like that one.
That's right.
He didn't like that
one. And hell, he don't like that. That's right. And if she came home with that particular idea, huh?
And all about getting, get an understanding.
Oh, I don't think you'd enjoy her coming home and saying, hey, husband, you know?
I absolutely would not appreciate that at all.
There you go. Yeah, you want to have your freak on, but you don't want her to have her freak on. Okay.
I love the man's voice, boy. I love the man's voice.
Mm.
You guys are real.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, no, baby, but you're my best friend. Yeah, I know. Okay.
All right.
Hey, I want to commend Brother Wiggins though on his transparency, man. I appreciate you sharing that with us, brother. That's a sensitive topic and a sensitive subject. But you know, you're already on the winning side, because you're willing to talk about it. You know, and you're willing to share that with your wife, and you guys talk about it together, man. So you guys are gonna be just fine.
Hey, but you know what, Darius? It's really troublesome, man. This ED thing, I never really realized that, man. But it's a combination of high blood pressure and diabetes and a heart disease that I had. It brought all that stuff on, man. And I gotta see doctors to deal with this thing. Opposed to going to get me a freak on the side and playing with myself. I mean, man, my God, man, I ain't never been with
like that.
I'd like to
We'll be back again.
I'd like to make a suggestion with that.
I will. Sorry, we're out of here. Sorry.
Hey, Jupiter, thank you.